Karima Brown, live, online, smartphones, DSTV, and 92.7, and 106 FM.
8 minutes after 8 o'clock, the fight back against Public Enterprises Minister Pravin Gordhan, who has made it his mission to clear out the rot in state-owned companies that became prey to state capture, has intensified. And now he faces at least three public protector complaints. I revealed during my conversation with Eusebius Mkhize last week on Gordhan's leaked submission to the Zondo Commission that the public protector, Busisiwe Mkhwebane, was investigating the minister's role in the earlier retirement package offered to the former South African Services Deputy Commissioner Ivan Pillay in 2010. This was based on a complaint lodged in November 2016 by Lebogang Hoveka, an employee in the Office of the Deputy President. The EFF has now also lodged two complaints against Gordhan with the public protector, accusing the minister of lying to Parliament about his interactions with the Gupta family and his role at SARS and the establishment of the so-called rogue unit. Now, of course, we know that the charges against Minister Gordhan were dropped because there was no basis in law for them. And we also know that the provision of the early retirement package to Mr. Pillay was well within the rules that governs how public servants retire. Well, joining me on the line to look at this fight back, what lies behind it, what drives it, and how to connect the dots, we speak with Bishop Malusi Mpumlwana, the General Secretary of the South African Council of Churches. Bishop, good evening. A very warm welcome to the program.
Good evening, and thank you for having me.
Now, Bishop, can you tell me if you are surprised at the intensity of the fight back against Minister Gordhan at the time when you have the Nugent Commission of Inquiry that came down so emphatically on, for example, SARS, a key component of the state capture project, which was, of course, hollowed out. And, of course, the fact that Minister Gordhan has been placed in charge by President Cyril Ramaphosa of cleaning out the rot at state-owned enterprises, which were, of course, the vehicle through which the patronage flowed between the Guptas, President Jacob Zuma, his friends and his family.
No, I wouldn't be surprised at all. However, I'm surprised. I would have thought that there were different things that were brought against Mr. Gordhan, if there were anything. I'll say this because the South African Council of Churches did raise questions of clarity with Mr. Swart Wibram in the past when he had preferred charges against Mr. Gordhan.
Yeah.
And at that time, one thing I want to make clear is that we believe in the rule of law.
Yes.
We believe that everybody is equal before the law, and we believe that there should be no preferential treatment of one person or the other.
Mm.
But we also believe that there should be no negative application of the law against certain people for reasons that are not clear in the law.
Mm.
And for this reason, we then wrote and asked for a meeting with Mr. Abrams, which he granted.
Mm.
And it was really to say, is there another rule book regulation that he was facing the charges on with regard to Mr. Pillay?
Mm-hmm.
Because it was clear to us, according to what we were reading in the rules of the government employment fund, the pension fund, that the employer is supposed to pay that money that Mr. Gordhan had authorized. And so you couldn't say, therefore, that there was. In fact, the word they used was that this is fraud.
Mm.
And so we wanted to know whether it would be really to use a language like that against the Minister of Finance at a time when you're dealing with the junk status being trying to reverse that.
Mm.
And so today, when you're trying to reverse another form of junk status, which is what is happening at the state-owned enterprises, trying to reverse that again to get another attack. So it's not surprising to me. What does surprise me is the regurgitation of the same issues all over again. And that surely they cannot be, because these are intended to have a different result. It must be because it is intended as some kind of... I respect the public protector, I'm sure, that they would have applied their mind, but I fail to see how they can come at a different conclusion from all that Mr. Abrams and his team tried to achieve 2 years ago. I find it difficult to believe that they can find a different answer.
Yeah, now, of course, the public protector, Busisiwe Mkhwebane, in her statement says that just because a court of law has found or that the NPA has found that there was no criminal conduct, that doesn't mean that there was no misconduct. And this is her justification for, of course, coming for Mr. Gordon. Now, this is the same public protector who, of course, in a court of law, capitulated when she tried to extend the remit of her mandate in trying to define what the Reserve Bank can and can't do on monetary policy. This is also the same public protector which effectively failed to inform the public that she had met with state security and the presidency on a number of matters. And of course, she's got two reports, particularly the way in which she investigated the Estina Dairy Farm matter and excused former Minerals Minister Mosibenzi Zwane and former Premier of the Free State Mr. Ace Magashule. The Democratic Alliance is taking that case up against her. She's also been spoken about in Parliament as potentially bringing the office of the public protector into disrepute. Ms. Mkhwebane has not, Bishop, exemplified the role of a public protector. She's often acted in partisan. She also often acted outside of her understanding of what her role is. What is the public protector's reason or what drives the public protector to come after Mr. Gordon, after the head of the public prosecution's authority, in fact, dismissed the charges against Mr. Pravin Gordhan and said that there was no basis in law for it, after, of course, going on a very public display of putting these charges together in the first place?
It can be very difficult. It baffles it baffles the mind to think of what could be the reason. As I say, I'm quite confident, having had that meeting with Mr. Sean Abrams. In fact, the very next day he withdrew the charges.
Yes.
After that meeting, because it was clear to all of us in that he said, "Look, give me a chance. I'm only reviewing this matter," and he reviewed the matter and he dropped the charges. There were no charges whatsoever. And so it seems to me that one can only presume that in the same way that the public prosecutor at the time found reason to act against Mr. Gordhan in his new role as finance minister, that there's somebody who, let's say, instigates the public protector. I respect this officer. I can't imagine that it operates on anything but good reason. Let's just say, therefore, that somebody is misleading the public protector, maybe in their office, to act at a time when, in fact, the whole nation is looking to the cleanup of the state-owned enterprises. Because if these are not restored, the whole South Africa Incorporated will collapse. If the state-owned enterprises are not restored to good property, this economy will collapse. And I cannot imagine who in their right minds would want to have that happen to this country for any reason whatsoever.
Now, of course, we've also seen the Economic Freedom Fighters ramp up its campaign against Mr. Gordhan. In fact, they called him corrupt, they called him racist, and they, of course, called him a super minister and said that he's been captured by Cyril Ramaphosa. There was also an attempt to drive a wedge between him and Mr. Tito Mboweni when Mr. Mboweni was sworn in as finance minister. A lot of race baiting, a lot of character assassination, of course, based on very little. But what is interesting is that you, of course, put together the unburdening panel where members of the state who were coerced or who were forced or who were trapped into cooperating with state capture came to unburden themselves. Now, it it doesn't take a rocket scientist to link, for example, the fact that one of the people who, in fact, funded the EFF to register as a political party was one of the people that was a politically exposed person that was being investigated by SARS, an alleged cigarette smuggler, Mr. Mazzotti. And of course, we know that Mr. Mpofu is the senior counsel for Mr. Tom Moyane at SARS, and the relationship between these individuals are very insidious. And it becomes very clear in my mind, certainly, and I want to know if you share my view, Bishop, that the EFF has now morphed into a proxy, if you like, for the Zuma faction on the issue of Mr. Gordhan, because the noose is now really tightening, if you like. I mean, the president has fired Mr. Moyane. He's thrown down the gauntlet despite Mr. Moyane's threat of going to the Constitutional Court. He said Mr. Moyane remains fired. His affidavit remains, and that Mr. Moyane, in fact, refused to use any forum to explain himself and the charges against him. And of course, Mr. Moyane's lawyer and Mr. Moyane is unable to explain why he met with Bain a year before he was actually appointed to the SARS. And of course, why a mutual acquaintance, Mr. Duma Kandlovo, introduced Bain to Mr. Zuma. And of course, Mr. Zuma is the one that made Mr. Moyane the SARS head. And we all know that in the affidavit of Mr. Gordhan, that one of the issues that he raised with the president when he was reappointed after the Des van Rooyen debacle was the question of Mr. Moyane's leadership of SARS. What do you make of the EFF's efforts to try and embroil Mr. Gordhan in a series of inquiries to try and impugn his character?
In the nature of our observations, we make observations of what seems very strange. This, of course, is one of those things. And we don't normally would pronounce directly without actually having an opportunity to discuss those things with the people concerned. In this case, it would be inappropriate for me to pronounce on the intentions behind the movements of a particular political party without really raising that with them. I actually find it very strange, especially because it was, we thought, the EFF, that was one of the parties that, as well as the South African Communist Party, that were committed to the acting against what appeared to be all the improprieties of the former president. It's very strange and surprising that they would have what appears to be an intention to put the spanner in the works in the efforts to try and clean up the particularly because it is actually Mr. Gordhan who is doing this work. But I also want to say that one of the reasons why Mr. Pile was acted against actually yes. at the time had to do with their investigations into the tobacco industry.
Yeah, particularly so the illicit tobacco industry.
The illicit tobacco industry, exactly. That was a particular issue of concern for those that wanted them out of the way. And of course, I'm almost reluctant to suggest, but it is that fight that is now again back at play in the context of the EFF. I would have to give them the opportunity to speak to that. But on the optics of it, it looks very strange that a political party that has been campaigning for the right things apparently in Parliament over Mr. Zuma, it now seems to be actually putting the spanner in the works against those things that are now being redressed and cleaned up.
The other thing that is quite puzzling for me, of course, is that the EFF apologized to the nation for supporting Ms. Mkhwebane. Remember during the lengthy public hearings into who should be our public protector, the Democratic Alliance raised the question of Ms. Mkhwebane's relationship with state security. And in fact, it was Tuli Madonsela who said, once a spy, always a spy and she doesn't know of a retired spy. And Julius Malema personally apologized to the nation for choosing her as the African female candidate. And they expressed grave concern about her ability to do her job when it became clear that she was aiding and abetting a lot of the individuals that were connected to state capture. And this was, of course, when it served the EFF's interests to weaken Mr. Zuma and to project themselves as the party that is actually responsible for his removal. How does a party who apologizes for having chosen Ms. Mkwebane, given her record, now turn to the very same person to investigate someone that they now believe has behaved improperly?
I would not hold that against them, precisely because as long as they remain the Chapter 9 institution that must do its job, I think everybody should use the public protector, regardless of whatever misgivings people might have. The only issue for me is nature of the issues that are being brought before the public protector. In this case, these are issues that, in our view, seem to be at odds with the whole project of cleaning up the country. So if the EFF, on the one hand, said, we do not trust Ms. Mkwebane, advocate Mkwebane for any reason, it does not stop them from raising an issue if Karima in state has done something inappropriate. They should still do that because she remains in office. The issue is, what are you bringing to the public protector and how does this reflect on your presumed role to try and make sure that we've got a clean government? That, for me, is where the puzzle is.
And, of course, what Mr. Gordon's lawyers are saying is that the public protector has yet to give them an explanation of the alleged wrongdoing. They've already acceded that the fact that Mr. Gordon was found to not have broken any laws is not the reason why they are now calling him. They are saying they are talking about impropriety, but we can't understand the nature of the impropriety. Isn't it important for us, if we are to respect the Chapter 9 institutions, that we have clarity that they are actually executing their mandate?
Yes, indeed, it is important. But I think that there's something beyond that. It is not only about the respecting of the public of the Chapter 9 institutions. It's also about the whole environment. You know, Karima, maybe we do need to say this, but we are not out of the woods as far as our junk status is concerned.
Yes.
We are definitely not out of the woods.
Yes.
And one of those things has to do with the fact that we are seriously in debt in this country. Not so long ago, we were borrowing 10 billion rand a week, and I think it's higher today.
Mm.
We were owing around 2 trillion. I think it's closer to 3 trillion today.
Mm.
And that we were servicing the cost. We probably are servicing it now at close to 200 billion rand to service the debt. And that therefore means that we are actually we're pretty much less than a going concern. And if what stands in the way between us and a good environment economically is if we clean up the state-owned enterprises, there is no greater project for South Africa Incorporated today than that, apart from just making sure that people in government are behaving right. But definitely these institutions, as far as monies are concerned, they are, so there can be no greater. It's almost like saying this is national project number one for every citizen in this country, and that's what we should go. So the issue then gets to be, even if one had issues about the difference between, if you saw the distinction between what the public protector is doing and the national public prosecutor is doing, even if you were to make those nuances, the question is, would be this the time and the place to take that action in the light of the implications and the possibility that, in fact, you can collapse the effort to clean up these institutions? And I'm not making Pravin Gordhan somebody more important than the rest of government, but it just so happened that at this point, that's what is handling, and it is a matter of national security, actually. It's the same way that when Mr. Sean Abrams acted against him when he was busy traveling all over the world to try and make sure that we shore up the investment environment. The same thing happened. This is very strange. Why is it that always when this kind of work is at play, in whose interest would this be? I don't know. Those are the questions that we would want to have understood. And I think that whether one is the public protector or even the president for that matter, one needs to be circumspect about the kind of actions that they take in a certain environment, in the economics and the politics of the country.
Now, a final question, Bishop. When the former Deputy Finance Minister Mqebisi Jonas spoke about the phenomena of state capture, he described it akin to a coup, which was essentially substituting constitutional structures of the state and replacing them with a set of shadowy institutions for the personal benefit and gain of the former president, his friends and his family. You've raised now the question of national interest and of the fact that so much depends on how we fix our state-owned enterprises and whether South Africa is seen as a going concern off the back of this reform process. If one is committed to replacing a constitutional order in a way that is described by academics who study the phenomena as akin to a coup, it's obviously not unexpected that this level of fight back is happening.
No, it's not surprising. But I think the language of a coup, you might make in a political sense.
Yes.
But I look at it much more simply than that. And I actually think that genuinely it is personal financial interest. I don't think there's anything more grand than personal financial interest. And of course, these personal financial interests also go with the need to protect oneself or some people from the possibility of consequences of wrongdoing. And so, actually, I mean, this is exactly how the mafia functions. That's why we describe it as almost a mafia state, because a mafia is not interested in a coup for political purposes. They're interested in ensuring that whatever government is in place, they protect their interests and that their monies keep running in this improper, crude way that they've been doing it. I think that there are people here whose business is to milk the state. They've made this their living, and they know that if they get caught with any property that begins to take the place of this dark cloud that they've been operating under, if that gets uncovered,
yes,
then not only will they fail to get what they've been getting, but also that they will probably find their way to jail, and nobody wants to go to jail. And I think that these are some of the issues. However, as this has been done, it is done at the pain that we might actually find that people, our country becomes less able to secure capital and higher costs, therefore there will be direct impact on the ability of the country to meet its social services and infrastructure. This will result in a sharp decline, actually, of the value of our stock, including our pensions. You can imagine what this means for ordinary people.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Bishop. We're running out of time. I think you've made the really important point, which is that politics are always about sets of interests, and you've hit the nail on the head. This is about personal financial interests and the possibility that the taps might finally be turned off. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we speak with the editor-in-chief of News24, Adrian Basson, off the back of the testimony given today by former Public Enterprises Minister Barbara Hogan.